Thank you, Chonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, October 13th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Ministry of Health officials and civil society organizations urge the government to prioritize the health sector in the next budget.
We are not growing from government resources. Any growth that we've had really is from partner funding. And if that is withdrawn, it's a major disaster.
MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai says he did not do anything wrong in skipping the burial of a top party official in Bulawayo at the weekend.
And the Zimbabwe Investment Authority says it is not true that Nigerian billionaire businessman Aliko Dangote has pulled out of multi-million dollar deals with Harare.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Ministry of Health officials and civil society organizations told lawmakers today to lobby the Finance Ministry to provide more resources for the health sector in its 2016 budget. The country, they said, faces imminent disaster if donors who are currently providing more than 80% of the funds required to run healthcare in the country pulled out. Ivan Chifera has more from Harare.
Health and Child Welfare Permanent Secretary Dr. Gerald Gwinji told Parliament's Health Portfolio Committee during a 2016 budget consultation meeting today that he is worried government support for health had been declining over the years, leaving donors to bear the brunt.
Highlight that we are not growing from government resources. Any growth that we've had really is from partner funding. And if that is withdrawn, it's a major disaster in the country. It's really a major disaster, and we think we should invest more in our health in order to avert that.
He said the ministry is worried by low staffing levels in hospitals and clinics, service provision and drug supplies in the country. Inji said he is not expecting much changes in terms of budget allocations given the country's low revenues and depressed economy. The ministry expects salaries to chew $273 million, with $11 million being needed for capital expenditure and $29 million for operations. The Zimbabwe Association of Church-Related Hospitals Executive Director Vuyelwa Sidile Chitimbire told the committee it's worrying that the government no longer prioritized healthcare funding. She also lamented the lack of funding to deal with the time bomb that is presented by non-communicable diseases such as diabetes, high blood pressure, and cancer.
The government should, one, support commitments to progressive move towards a target of 5% of the GDP spent on government health expenditure, and also to try and reach at least $86 government spending per capita.
Community Working Group on Health Director Itairu Sike said the government should do all it can to increase staffing levels in public hospitals, which he said were last reviewed in the 1980s.
So it means we need to review the staff establishment, because the current one that we are using is now outdated, given the burden of disease that we are now grappling with in the country.
A representative of NATFARM, Roland Mlalazi, said he expected the government to avail funding to the state drug procuring company so that they can buy much-needed medicines for public hospitals in 2016. He said the company currently provided warehousing facilities for drugs purchased by donors, as it does not have money to procure drugs for the nation.
The amount of capitalization that's required, obviously, it's a large amount of money. I think at one time when the study was made, it was actually discovered that actually something like $64 million if we really to acquire the whole range of medicines that our hospitals do not require.
Zimbabwe Medical Association President Dr. Agnes Mahomba told lawmakers to ensure Treasury adequately funded public health hospitals so that the majority of the population can access health services. She said private institutions were now overcrowded as service delivery had deteriorated in public health facilities. Besides, private clinics and hospitals are expensive for the ordinary person. Today's meeting followed one held last week, during which stakeholders from civil society organizations in the HIV sector, under the auspices of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, set up a committee to lobby Treasury and donors to increase funding for the health sector. Some, like Kimchanyara Mkamuri of ZNNP Plus, said it would be disastrous if donors pulled out.
If we were to say our donors pull out, what's going to be of us as people living with HIV? Naturally, this is a disaster that is looming.
Committee Chairperson Dr. Peter Mataruse said his committee would engage Treasury at their pre-budget seminar so some of the stakeholders' input can be included in the budget. This year, the Health Ministry wanted $303 million for operations but was given only $53 million, with donors providing $147 million to fund the sector. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa is expected to present the 2016 budget to Parliament next month. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
As reported yesterday, MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai and his party leadership have come under fierce criticism for boycotting the burial of party deputy organizing secretary and Nkulumani lawmaker Thamsanqa Mahlangu. Mahlangu was buried in Bulawayo Saturday amid chaos as rival families browed over his burial. Blessing Zulu spoke with Tsvangirai about the issue and fights that allegedly broke out at the funeral between rival factions in the party.
First of all, Mahlangu's death was caught up between the paternal family and the stepfather's family. And the dispute around who should take a leading role became very prominent. As a party, we said we will get the guidance from the family. And the family would not unite as to how to proceed. So we just said we will not be part of the dispute. In our culture, a person is buried by his family. And if there is any guy, if there is any dispute. That's the attitude we took. Unfortunately, we had all trouble to blow it to give this young man a very important send-off. Because he was one of the critical young cadres in our movement. No one doubts the role Mahlangu played in the MDC, in its formation and its growth. So one would find it surprising that the president of the party would not give such a young man the right send-off. It's mischievous of the highest order.
But there are also reports that MDC youths were actually quarreling amongst themselves, adding to the confusion created by the alleged family dispute.
I'm sure there were some rowdy youths. I'm sure expecting Lumani and Luveve, but I was not there. I was only receiving reports because there were people who were trying to mediate between the families. And we thought we had almost settled the matter until there were these clashes, which were totally outside the respect that we wanted to give some Mashan.
That was MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai on the line from Harare.
Zimbabweans who had applied for leave to remain in South Africa under the special dispensation permits and had not yet received them by today, which was the final day of the program, have been given a two-week lifeline by the South African government as it continues to sort out the documentation. The permits are valid for 3 years. We spoke to Zimbabwe Community in South Africa Chairman Ngabuto Nicholas Mabena for more on the latest from the South African government.
The assumption by the Minister of Home Affairs was that by today, all permits would have been collected. We'll recall that some few days ago, the Minister of Home Affairs, Honorable Kikap, had said 198,000 people he had applied and their payments have been decided on, and that we were dealing with only 700 something payments that they still needed to decide on. And of those, then there were 12,000 people whose permit applications were rejected. So what they've been doing currently is to do an automatic review of all the 12,000 permits which were rejected for various reasons, either one, the criminal record, or one, did not submit enough documents, or one, did not have their permits or on the passport, the 2010 permit. So all those permits are under review.
In other words, those who do not have those permits at the moment are still there legally, and they can work and stay there without being deported?
As long as a person applied for a ZSP and the proof that they applied for a ZSP, they are not at any risk of being arrested. They can even travel across the border to Zimbabwe using their receipts. When they get to the border, they are given either 90 days or any days that are determined by the official at the border.
That was Ngabuto Nicholas Mabena, the chairman of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Johannesburg. President Robert Mugabe's spokesman and Information Secretary George Charamba met today with representatives from MISA Zimbabwe following his weekend comments threatening new legislation to muzzle the independent media, which he says is writing lies and has become appendages of the opposition. A statement from MISA Zimbabwe said they discussed the threats with Charamba and the role media organizations should play regarding the government-sanctioned information and media panel of inquiries, IMPI findings and recommendations. Among other issues, Charamba updated the meeting on the digital migration process and the government's plans on the opening up of the broadcasting sector.
Employers Confederation of Zimbabwe, EMCO's director John Mufukare, says the number of employers joining them in challenging the recently amended Labour Act in the High Court is rising. EMCO's recently approached the High Court challenging the constitutionality of some sections of the labour law, which it says infringe on the rights of employers. Mufukare tells reporter Junga Kandemiri that they are particularly worried about a certain section they say infringes on the rights as employers.
Yes, it is correct that EMCO has taken a class action on behalf of its members over the retrospective application of the Labour Amendment Act. Now, we are quite happy with most of the other provisions in the Act, but we think it is not fair that those employers who waited for a Supreme Court ruling on dismissals or notice should be the ones who are victimized, when those who had not even waited for the Supreme Court ruling are going away scot-free. So we are actually challenging the constitutionality of this dissimilar application of the law to people who have done the same thing.
Companies were given an option to take back those employees that were retrenched. Why are they not taking this option?
Jonga, that option you are talking about is really the option between the deep blue sea and anything over in the beyond. Most of these people took the action they did because they cannot afford these employees anymore. So we must appreciate that this was not just an act of being evil on the part of the employer. It was an act of survival.
That was EMCO's director John Mufukare in Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metom Wave and on the 4930 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
Nigerian businessman Aliko Dangote's multi-million dollar investment to Zimbabwe on the spotlight.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
European Union observers say that despite logistical problems, Guinea's presidential election on Sunday appeared to be free and fair.
And Tanzania's presidential elections are less than 2 weeks away, and analysts are debating whether the country's ruling party can retain the presidency.
In the economic segment today, Blessing Zulu spoke with Nigel Chanakira, the Zimbabwe Investment Authority chairman, who refutes allegations that Nigerian businessman, the billionaire Aliko Dangote, has pulled out of Zimbabwe. Chanakira says that's not true, adding the authority has just issued him with investment certificates.
As far as I'm aware, those are very inaccurate, if not mischievous, reports about the fact that he has left Zimbabwe. As far as I am concerned, sitting at ZIA, they are still processing applications for the location in terms of the plants that he actually wants to operate from, for both the cement plant as well as the coal mining project. And then finally, of course, the energy project that he wants to get involved in. So from what I can gather, somebody picked up from the internet the fact that there was a speech which he was making, and he made reference to various investments in different countries. But it must be noted that those comments were made prior to his arrival into Zimbabwe.
But still, how significant is this investment to Zimbabwe?
Well, you know, as I've said before, you know, we will always be grateful once the investments themselves have been made. But in my view, if you get somebody of the ilk of Dangote actually coming to Zimbabwe to discuss investments and then subsequently sending the investment team to do so, then I would like to think that it's a good thing. So those investments are as significant as they are when they materialize. And so we are looking forward to investments to the order that they are indicating, because they will be significant. Because in 1 year alone, if you look at the history of Zimbabwe, we've not had a single investor come and invest in excess of $1 billion. If you look at our investment flows last year, it was $460 million. And over the past 5 years, we've been creeping upwards from around about $100 million per annum during the dollarization period.
Let's look at the indigenous law. It appears there is policy discord in cabinet, with some ministers saying that it is going to be reformed, and then we have others saying that it has to be implemented to the letter. Does this not have the potential of turning away investors?
Well, I think clearly what we need is clarity in terms of the articulation, because obviously every time there is a new minister, each new minister that has come in adopts his approach to the extent that he thinks it's feasible. And clearly also what is very clear to me is that whenever we are close to elections, the volume can be amplified with regards to the intensity of the application of that law.
That was Chairman Nigel Chanakira of the Zimbabwe Investment Authority on the line from Harare with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
A
Thursday is International Day of Rural Women, and Studio 7 wants to hear from you. Where in rural Zimbabwe do you live? Call us and let us help you share your story of life in rural Zimbabwe. Do you have WhatsApp? Send us your voice message so we can play it on radio. Or text us your number so we can call you back. Our WhatsApp number is 001-202-465-0318. 001-202-465-0318. Studio 7, your source for balanced news.
Young people living in the rural communities say they are struggling to make ends meet due to the crippling financial situation in the country. Some have taken to gardening to raise money, but with everyone now selling, it's hard to earn a living. Many interviewed told Studio 7. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with a 23-year-old who only wanted to be addressed as Vanessa. Vanessa, who lives in Kafusi in Gwanda, tells her experience as a youth living in rural Zimbabwe.
Our parents work hard to get money, and besides, there are no jobs here in rural areas that can assist our parents, to assist us to get the education necessary.
And you pointed out, Vanessa, that for you as a 23-year-old, you are seeing other girls around your community who are falling for marriages because of the prevailing conditions.
Being pregnant nowadays at the age of us, at 23, is the best way, just because you get accommodated where you get married. Besides, if you can't get pregnant, then you will be risking your life to get HIV and some diseases just because you're trying to get that money to suit your needs.
But how are you surviving as a youth?
It's too hard to survive. We are struggling very hard.
Are you getting any assistance from any other organizations or even the government itself?
No assistance at all. And no governmental assistance is helping us. We are just living as we are.
So day to day, what are you doing to even make some ends meet?
We use plants, we plant gardens and sell vegetables, and that money can sustain us. Just allowing some children younger than us to be allowed to go to school.
And Vanessa, what's your message to other youth out there who are facing the same issues as you? What do you say and what do you hope?
I hope that as we Zimbabweans, we seek maybe the introduction of handwork, like maybe sewing or crochet things, like maybe introduction of work that will help us maybe to improve Zimbabwe to something better.
That was 23-year-old youth Vanessa on the line with Studio 7 from Kafusi in Gwanda. I also caught up with another rural woman in Matabeleland in Zimbabwe. She will introduce herself and tell us how her life is going.
My name is Badre Penford, aged 22 years, from Nyamagera Village 6 in Manicaland of Zimbabwe. I'm one of the women who is inside in farming. For the past 2 years, I was growing tomatoes and cabbage, but this year I changed into another level. This year I'm in tobacco farming. It's my first time. I'm going for 1 acre, and I also happy because my tobacco seeds are growing very, very well. My advice to my fellow women who are also in rural areas, what a man can do, also a woman can do it. We don't have to sit down and wait for our husbands to feed us, to feed our family. No, we can also have to do something so that we can help each other.
That was Dadirai Penford from Nyamajura Village 6 in Manicaland.
Malaria kills about 584,000 people per year the world over, and the majority of these deaths are recorded in Africa. Zimbabwe is one of the worst affected countries that have seen gains made in fighting the mosquito-borne disease being eroded in the past decade. although treatment limits the number of deaths. Now an even better treatment called artemisinin is being hailed for doing wonders in Zimbabwe after trials thanks to China's Tu Youyou, who was awarded the 2015 Nobel Prize for Medicine this week for the discovery of the malaria drug.
The anti-malaria medicine artemisinin, which was developed by Chinese scientists represented by newly announced Nobel Prize winner Tu Youyou, has worked effectively in Zimbabwe and won the praise from locals. Zimbabwe started promoting the medicine in 2008, which was the result of years of research and a project involving 500 scientists in China. A Chinese pharmacologist Tu Youyou was recognized as one of those who made outstanding contributions and singled out for the Nobel laureate. According to a survey conducted by Zimbabwe's Ministry of Health, artemisinin's cure rate against malaria is as high as 97%. Boniface Chimwendo, a relative of a patient with malaria, is from Mudzi, a district in Zimbabwe's Mashonaland East Province. His mother has suffered from malaria for almost 10 years and has been cured thanks to the new drug artemisinin.
The malaria disease, develops some resistance to, like when you are given malaquin. Some people don't get cured, but the disease will get some resistance. So the discovery of a new drug is very essential because it will help people cure, to help people live longer from away from the disease of malaria disease.
Harare resident Charity Mazingaizo also hails the new drug.
Last year my cousin got malaria and we took him to the local clinic. They gave him some drugs. They gave him artemisinin and it was a very good drug. He took it for almost a week and then he was okay. I think the drug is very good here in Africa.
According to Tani Jing, head of the Chinese medical team now working in Zimbabwe, artemisinin has played an important role in eradicating malaria in the country.
Before artemisinin was introduced in the country, they used quinine. According to their statistics, artemisinin has worked very effectively since it was applied here, and it has few side effects. The medicine has won prevalent recognition for both local medics and patients.
Meanwhile, the shutting down of the Shabani Mashava mines deprived many Shabani residents of a decent way to earn a living. Another scourge has emerged in the midst of their suffering, that of mosquitoes, as our correspondent Patricia Munaligwa reports.
Zvishavane mine in town has a lot of swampy areas that provide breeding ground for mosquitoes. Many in the area bemoaning the closure of the mines, which used to spray the entire mine in town to get rid of the parasites just before the onset of the rainy season. The local authority and the government have not risen to the occasion to cover that gap left by the closed mines. Nancy Mureri, a resident from the high-density suburb of Maglazi, told Studio 7 that the mosquitoes give them sleepless nights.
We are in trouble with these mosquitoes. You will find them everywhere, in the dark corners, in wardrobes, under the sinks. At night, you cannot sleep. You know how irritating mosquitoes are. I cannot afford to buy spray that lasts longer. Sometimes I burn barks of trees to try and get rid of them.
Mercy Mushangwe, a former Shaban mine worker, told Studio 7 that residents dread the onset of summer as it brings a perennial problem in the mosquitoes.
The mine itself had a department which would actually go around spraying, killing mosquitoes, because we have so many swampy areas here in Shabani. But now that all that has ceased, you find Shabani is infested with mosquitoes. It's good enough that it doesn't have malaria, but you cannot spend a night without either lighting a mosquito coil or either not. If you don't have a mosquito net, then it's worse. They will actually feast on you.
The mosquitoes in Shishavana are not deadly as those found in other parts of Zimbabwe like Chiredzi.
Thanks, Patricia Mudadigwa. That brings us to the end of the show. And remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk when the youths are going to give us a show. That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.